Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office.
Virtual.
Although, Zorba, you're not frantically typing notes on
no,
a computer like some doctors
I
do during appointments,
not.
You know? Do you do that in appointments?
Yeah, I do, you know, back and forth, back and forth.
No eye contact, just looking at the screen.
Right. No eye contact.
You
we
have
just
good
screen
bedside
people.
Manner.
That's
you're great.
Right.
All right, we'll talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
We're going to talk about a new study that is really important for anyone with diabetes. And it has to do with Ozempic kidney disease. We're going to talk about the role of GLP-1 inhibitors and other groups of diabetic drugs, GLP-2, SGLT-2. And these are game changers in diabetic care. Very important new research. And epidurals linked to a reduction of serious complications in childbirth, the role of that in childbirth, really important for anyone who is going to have a baby.
Interesting. And what's our recipe today?
Moroccan fava bean soup. I was just in Morocco.
Yes.
I love this particular soup. We found a wonderful recipe. And if you've never tried fava beans in a soup, this is a recipe for you.
And I think we're going to hear a little bit about your trip to Morocco.
Absolutely.
All right. Stick around for
Great
that.
Great place to go.
To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's welcome our first caller now. This is a listener in Missouri. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
I have a problem with peeing.
Uh-huh.
I had a Foley catheter in for like 7 months.
Oh, wow. Why was it in that long? I mean,
well, seems to be a shortage of doctors and nurses around here.
Uh-huh.
And it took them that long to figure out what to do about this giant cyst I had in my abdomen.
Oh.
And the cyst had closed off my bladder.
Oh, huge.
And so they had to put a catheter in because I couldn't pee.
Mm-hmm.
And then it took them a while to figure out what to do about the cyst. You know, first they drained it, and that didn't work. Then they tried cutting it up on surgery. That didn't work. They finally burned it out of there with radiation.
So I want to go to the cyst for a second. So in other words, you had a cyst. It was not a cancerous cyst. Is that right? Or was it cancer?
Well, no. When they drained it, the fluid, they tested it. There was no malignancy in the fluid.
Mm-hmm.
But when they did the surgery, the shell of the cyst, you know, turned out to be cancerous.
Uh-huh.
And it was attached to the CT scan showed it was attached to a seminal duct of my prostate.
Oh, got you. So what kind of a cancer was it? Did you give you a name to that cancer?
Well, they just called it prostate cancer.
So it was a prostate cancer with the cyst there. Got it. Okay. So 7 months, they finally took radiation to get to shrink it, and then you go on from there.
Yeah, and then so then I could pee again. So then I took the catheter out, and ever since then, it's been several months now, I'm up like every half hour to hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
24/7. This is not just at night, but this is 24/7. I have this, you know, overwhelming urge to pee.
Wow.
But I'm only peeing like
little bits.
You know, two to 4 ounces at a time.
Yeah, I bet.
When it should be up to like 14 ounces.
Right.
And it's not getting any better. And the urology nurse told me, don't try to hold it. You know, just go ahead and pee.
Yeah.
But it's hard getting any sleep when you're up every
half
hour,
45
minutes.
Can't get
minutes.
Any sleep at all. So what do urologists say about this?
Right. They just said, well, that you know, the bladder will eventually, they think it will normalize, but it became habituated to the catheter.
Yeah. I don't know if it became habituated, but certainly it's not working properly. How long have you had the catheter out at this time?
Almost 3 months now.
So almost 3 months. Has there been any change over the 3 month period at all?
Not very much. Sometimes it'll be like an hour and a half before I have to pee, but the amount sometimes might go as high as five ounces, but that's about it.
Yeah, tiny, tiny amounts. So,
right.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I would do in a case like this. I would go and get a second opinion. got to get a second opinion. What's going on? I mean, 3 months, that's a long time. You can't say the bladder is just going to adjust to this. They, you know, they did two things to get rid of the cyst. They drained the cyst, and then they actually did radiation to reduce the cyst. Radiation can, of course, cause injury, because when you're using radiation, you're burning an area. That's what you're doing. That's what radiation is, kind of heat in the area. That's kind of the way that it works. And the question is, what did it do and what can you do about it? You need a second opinion. That's what you need, you know, because you're not going to be able to get any sleep with this. And the real question is, why is this going on? And what's going on? What can I do about it? And I would go somewhere else. I'd get a second opinion on it.
Okay. What kind of a doctor? Well, I guess a urologist.
Absolutely. And I would also, if I get a second opinion, I'd like to go to a tertiary institution. And a tertiary institution are places like a university hospital, someplace like Mayo Clinic, you know, Hopkins, you know, Cleveland Clinic. I would go somewhere where they're dealing with difficult problems such as yours. I wouldn't go just to another urologist. I would go to an academic urologist, because I would say, what's going on? This is what's happened, because you've got something that clearly 95% of the urologists often do not see a problem such as you have. Now, I might be wrong with that. There are a number of urologists who would disagree with that, but I'd do a tertiary place.
Okay. Well, I sure appreciate the information.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Thanks for your call. Thanks for sharing that, too. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413.
You know, he's gone to multiple institutions. And this is where I think tertiary institutions really are a game changer, because they see the stuff, they see more of the stuff than the average urologist sees. And the real question is, what can they do for him? And I don't think you should leave any stone unturned. It may just be this is, you know, a complication of the surgery. But the reality is, I wouldn't stop until I got an opinion from a really top-notch academic institution.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Call anytime. Let's go to our first healthy living topic now, Zorba. There's some new research out. Ozempic cuts the risk of chronic kidney disease complications.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this. First of all, this is, a really important game-changer study. So, first of all, let's talk about kidney disease. And kidney disease, needing to go on dialysis or kidney failure, it's a leading cause of death in America. A lot of it is caused by high blood pressure from a heart disease, same thing that causes heart disease, cholesterol. But a lot of it is really a result of diabetes. And the real question is, what can we do about it to keep it from happening? And until now, we really haven't had an answer. Now, Ozempic is in a group of drugs called GLP-1 drugs, and they're all a little bit different. They share a similar way of treating diabetes. They are an agonist for something called the GLP-1. Changes the way you eat with Ozempic, but there are other drugs that also are in this category that are different. They don't actually cause weight loss. So we don't know exactly whether or not all these drugs are equivalent, like a number of blood pressure pills. So getting back to it, they took 3,500 people with type 2 kidney disease who had diabetes. Half of them took a weekly injection of Ozempic. Half of them took a placebo shot. And they were following them over years. It was supposed to be a 5 to 10 year study. But they broke the code after 3.5 years because there was a difference between the placebo group and the Ozempic group. There was a 24% lower likelihood of having a major kidney event, like losing half of your kidney function, needing to go on dialysis, going into kidney failure, needing a transplant, in the Ozempic group. Very, very important. So in other words, we find that this particular group of drugs, at least this drug, the GLP-1, it may be specific to Ozempic and Wegovy, or it may also just be this category of drugs, will reduce the risk of needing dialysis or a kidney transplant if you have kidney disease. Now, there's another question here of whether or not people who have other risks for kidney disease should also be on a GLP-1 inhibitor. But it really is a game changer in treating kidney disease. And I find it kind of interesting that these drugs are there. Now, the other group of drugs for treating diabetes that are relatively new, the SGLT-1 drugs, have also been shown to improve kidney function. So what we have here that's kind of amazing is we have two new drugs. They're not generic. They're very very expensive because there have been several billion dollars of research that have gone into these drugs that seem to affect diabetes. And the issue with diabetes is not just getting your blood sugar under control, but these are drugs that actually affect the other things, such as kidney and heart disease, that are affected from diabetes. And I think anyone who is a diabetic should look at either the SGLT1 drugs or the GLP-1 drugs, inhibitors, for their diabetes, because it may have effect on other function. And I think it's an explosion on basically how we can use drugs to treat the complications of diabetes, not just the blood sugar.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Call us anytime. Leave us a voicemail if you want. Let's go to a voicemail now. Here's a listener from Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm wondering if Dr. Zorba could spend some time discussing the health effects of monosodium glutamate, otherwise known as MSG. I'm sensitive to it now, and I'm finding that it's in just about everything except whole foods. You know, like a banana won't have it, or fresh asparagus won't have it, but just it's everywhere, and I think it's toxic. It is associated with weight gain, and maybe that's why our society is so heavy, or one of the reasons. But anyway, if you could spend some time talking about that, I think it would benefit a lot of the listeners.
You know, it's kind of interesting. So monosodium glutamate makes food taste better. That's why it's used. And it used to be, it was initially called Chinese restaurant syndrome. And it was first sort of the effects of MSG were first discovered in Boston, because a number of the physicians and nurses went over to, they were the particular academic institution, which was Tufts, was right around a Chinese neighborhood, and they would go and have Chinese food, and they said, I wonder why, you know, some of us get a headache, some of us don't get a headache. And it was called initially that. But first of all, it's not in all the food. It's in a lot of prepared foods. Mm-hmm. That's what it's
a preservative.
If you make your food yourself, it doesn't have MSG. I mean, if you go and you make, like I am, I'm going to make a lamb roast, it's not going to have MSG in the lamb roast I'm making. Mm-hmm. So, and most of the foods you prepare at home, unless you put MSG in it, mm-hmm. it's not going to have anything in there. But if you use any prepared foods, it's commonly used. It is associated with weight gain, and the reason is food tastes better, so people eat more.
Okay.
I don't know if it makes you eat more, but you eat more of it because it adds umami to the taste of it. Some people get a headache, some do not. I don't think it's toxic. I just think some people are highly sensitive to it, and highly sensitive to certain amounts. So if they go to an Asian restaurant, it's commonly used in Chinese food, but it's used in other food, they can ask whether or not MSG is in there. And a number of Asian restaurants, especially in California, which I visit quite frequently, will say no MSG added to our food.
And yeah, I've seen that on menus.
You've seen places, it on menus. Yeah. And that's basically because people are sensitive to it. So mm-hmm. it's not toxic. It is sensitive, probably does increase weight because food tastes better. And if you make your own food, don't put it in it. And I certainly don't have any MSG in my spice cabinet. So anyone who comes to my house, come on to my house. I'll make some food. I'll make sure there's
okay,
no MSG.
I'm in.
There we got it.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we take a break, Zorba, throughout the history of medicine, we've seen countless contraptions and elixirs claiming to cure ailments or professing miraculous health benefits. That's a big sentence.
Yeah, they're always miraculous, miraculous. Take this and you'll see the light of day, even
you
though
go.
Your eyes are closed. That's right.
So let's
That's
wade right. into the murky past of medical quackery in this segment we call Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up.
Oh, you love that quack.
I do like it.
All right, Zorba, this one isn't so much from our past. It's something we see right now on the internet all the time. Tell us about online health tests that often cost money to take.
Well, first of all, if they're not FDA approved, then they're really not very good. I mean, that's ultimately it.
Have you seen these things online?
You think I look for online tests? But I've seen people who've talked about it. But,
sure.
But moving away from the online tests for one second, when I first started medicine, we had very little or no direct-to-consumer tests. And let me tell you what you had to go to the doctor for, a pregnancy test. Mm-hmm. Think about that. The FDA did not approve pregnancy tests because they actually weren't very good. Mm. I mean, you wouldn't tell. The pregnancy tests were not very sensitive, and you couldn't tell if they were positive until the second missed period. So people would misinterpret it. Once they got better, the FDA looked, and now we don't even think about that pregnancy test.
Right.
If we look at other tests, for instance, for COVID, we know those tests are good. So anything you can buy in the drugstore today is going to be pretty much good because drugstores, especially pharmacy chains such as CVS, Walgreens, and so on, are going to go tests that are FDA approved. So one of the things you want to know is this an FDA-approved test? If it's not an FDA-approved test, you got to question whether or not the test is very good. And then you got to think about whether or not it's going to require a doctor appointment. So, you know, I mean, that's sort of part of it. But this, there have been a number of studies that have looked at tests. Some of them range for like, you know, $12 to $2,000. Some of them are things for sexually transmitted diseases, STIs, STDs. Those can be good if they're FDA-approved. If they're not FDA-approved, you can't actually trust them. Why? Because you've got two things. You've got the false positive and the false negative. Mm-hmm. Okay, so an STD, sexually transmitted disease, STI, if it's a false negative, it says you don't have chlamydia or gonorrhea, when in fact you have chlamydia and gonorrhea or gonorrhea, and you may be transmitting it to somebody else. So the false negative rate is really, really important. Mm-hmm. The false positive rate is, okay, you've got it. You still have to go to a doctor and find out if they have it by that test. So what if your test is positive and their test is negative? What do you do about it? So I think there's a lot of quackery in the field. I don't trust tests that are online that you can't buy in a drugstore, because I don't know if they're FDA approved, and I would stay away from them.
Okay.
Because they might not be good for you.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to the show?
Just quack, quack, quack.
Send us an email
quack up,
at
quack up, 1-800 quack, quack, quack 462-7413.
Or
find us through Facebook.
Sure. Or zorba@wpr.org.
I love
it. Send us an email. We love talking about quackery.
We do.
Coming up, we got more of your phone calls. Zorba will be answering more of your emails, and we'll be cooking up a delicious Moroccan bean soup. That sounds good. So keep it right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. He's right over there. He's wearing what are you wearing? Oh, you're wearing like some athleisure wear.
Athleisure, that's
right?
It.
Is that what you're wearing?
I am Dr. Athleisure. That's right, that's right. I'm ready to go jog and help anyone who's jogging next to me or on the trail. No, I'm biking today.
Is that why you're wearing that?
E-bike.
You look
I'm ready
great.
For my e-bike.
Yeah,
thank you
look you. Healthy.
Look good, feel good, play good.
There it is.
There it is.
And you're listening to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, of course. And the number to call anytime if you have a healthy living question is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And of course, it's recipe time. But before we get into that, we got a message. So you've been to Morocco.
We don't have any horns to introduce the recipe. We need a music thing. It's recipe time.
Recipe
That's
horns.
Right. That's right.
I'm making a note.
That's
recipe
right.
horns. You recently took a trip to Morocco.
I did.
A bunch of photos on Facebook that you
I
posted.
Did.
Check those
Absolutely.
Out, listeners.
Loved it. Love Morocco.
And someone commented. We had a listener, Clinton Judy, who said, "I think you had posted a soup. This bean
yes.
soup we're going to go through."
Right.
And Clinton Judy said, "So will this soup recipe be turning up in a future episode of Zorba Pastor on Your Health?" Clinton Judy, it will be
right
now.
That's
we're
right.
going to do Moroccan fava bean soup.
We are back to the future. Now, you know, we don't talk a lot about fava beans because 30 years ago, Silence of the Lambs, there was a little comment about fava beans. And so the fava bean industry, I'm sure, looked at that and said, you know.
Big
you
fava
know,
looked
well,
at that?
Well, they're just like the prune industry, you know, has problems issue. But fava beans are very, very, especially fresh fava beans, are very commonly used in California. Fava beans are a whole bunch of bunch of things. For this particular soup, you can find dried fava beans, often at a good grocery store. This is a common soup in Morocco that they actually eat for breakfast.
Oh, wow.
We don't associate soup for breakfast, but we associate some hot things for breakfast, like oatmeal,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, it's the right thing to do, says Wilford Brimley.
That's exactly right.
I will take any opportunity to bring him
oatmeal.
Up.
Oatmeal, because you love him.
I know.
It's always in your brain.
Sorry.
He's sitting on your right shoulder.
He lives in my brain.
He's doing that. But a soup we think about, we have a hot porridge in the morning mm-hmm. that we have from oats. We don't think of beans, but in Morocco, this is often had in the morning, and the soup is all over the place in giant cauldrons. People put things on top of it. So I'm going to explain how we make this incredibly easy soup, incredibly easy in an Instant Pot, or if you don't have an Instant Pot, so we'll go how to do this. I love this. I've made it now twice, and it's delicious.
Okay. All right, let's hear it.
Start out with a cup of fava beans. Now, these are dried fava beans. When I buy it in the store, they're dried and peeled. So fava beans are peeled when you buy the dry stuff. You can also use a cup of regular fava beans.
Okay. One cup of fava beans.
That's right, dried. 3 cups of water, because we're using dried fava beans.
Okay, 3 cups of water. Now, wait, what kind of water are we talking about
here? What kind of water?
Here?
H2O, okay, not that, H3O.
The wet stuff,
that's
gotcha.
That's right, not H3O, which is heavy water, and we won't even go into that scientifically. Yeah. A couple cloves of garlic. If you love garlic, use like 3 or 4, but 2 cloves of garlic, roughly mashed.
2 cloves garlic, roughly mashed.
Teaspoon of cumin.
1 little tea cumin powder.
You can use that. You're going to have extra cumin on that you're going to use later. 1 teaspoon of paprika.
1 little tea paprika.
1/2 teaspoon of salt.
1/2 little tea salt.
A couple teaspoons of olive oil you're going to use for serving.
Yep. 2 little tea olive oil.
And then we're going to talk about using some chili powder if you want to.
Okay. Sorry, 2 big tea olive oil.
Right.
I take that back.
Well, we're going to use it.
For the people writing it down right now.
Yeah, that's right. All right, let's talk about how to make it. So dried fava beans, that's what I use. Soak it in water overnight. Pour the water off, put the soaked beans with water, garlic, cumin, and paprika in a large saucepan, bring it to a boil, and simmer, close lid slowly for about 30 minutes. Now, there's an alternative way to make it. If you have an Instant Pot, you don't have to soak those beans overnight. Put the whole thing in the Instant Pot, fava beans, 3 cups of water, garlic, cumin powder, and paprika and a little bit of salt in the Instant Pot. Put it on high for 30 minutes, and it's done. So when the beans are out and they're soft, what you want to do is add a couple of tablespoonfuls of olive oil and then puree it with an immersion blender. Do you have an immersion blender?
Is that like a Vitamix?
No.
No.
Take another guess.
Is that like a coffee grinder?
No. Go ahead. You got a third guess.
I don't have a third guess.
You don't have a third.
It sounds like I don't have one.
No, an immersion blender is not expensive. And what you do, it's a blender that you put in the pot.
Oh,
you should have one.
Okay.
So you don't have to put the stuff in the blender and have to wash 2 things. It's a blender. It looks like you're holding a blender stick, and you put it right in the pot, and you puree it.
Okay.
And everyone should have one if you're going to make pureed soup. Now, when you're actually blending this, if it's too thick, add more water or more chicken broth until it gets to a softer consistency. Okay. Divide the soup into bowls, and here's what they do now in Morocco. It's sitting on there in the bowls, and people say, do you want more garlic? And what you do is you have crushed garlic and olive oil. So I put a little container of it, and you put the crushed garlic on top of it, which has a little bit of olive oil.
And it kind of floats, right,
on top. It floats on the top.
Yeah, it looks great.
Then a little bit of cumin on top of that. Mm-hmm. Some pronounce it cumin. That's how they pronounce it in Morocco. So they put a little bit of cumin on top. Shake a little bit of paprika on top of that. Mm. And then they bring around a teeny bit of olive oil on top of that. So you've got this stuff floating on top of the soup, which is also very tasty, and then dig in.
I bet it looks good, too, doesn't it?
It looks good, and it smells. And the way I serve this when I have company is I don't put it in a bowl. I put it in a cup, because in Morocco, it's basically in a small cup, like a 6-ounce cup. And I'll tell you something. This soup is dynamite, and if you've never had fava beans, it's a delicious treat which will impress your friends.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to those phones now. Let's hear from a caller in Chicago, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much. My concern is actually related to something that began for me about 10 years ago, and I'll just give you a very brief background. So 10 years ago, I experienced my first ocular migraine, and this was without a headache, and it really came with some intense visual, kaleidoscope, colors, you name it, lasted about 30 minutes, followed by some really intense fatigue, but no headaches.
Did you get headaches when you were younger, when you were a kid?
No.
No, you did not get headaches.
No.
So all of a sudden you got this visual disturbance. What did you think when it happened?
Oh, it was, I could not believe what I was seeing. It was really alarming.
I went down, I was
35 years old, so I went all 35 years never having experienced anything like it, and went down a bit of a internet rabbit hole and realized it very clearly was what is titled, I guess, an ocular migraine.
Okay. So wait, did you talk to a doctor or anything about this when it happened before you went down the internet rabbit hole, or did you go down the internet rabbit hole and go, hey, and come out of it? I mean, you know, internet is great with information. It was pre-AI, so let's talk about it. But did you talk to a doctor when you had this?
Not initially.
Okay.
I had just the one ocular migraine, or what I thought was, and then about 4 years later, I had maybe one each year.
Oh.
For the next 4 years, and then I got pregnant with my first son, and I had about five of them during pregnancy, and that's when I initially went to my OBGYN, and she said, it's harmless, we checked for high blood pressure, et cetera, and she said, this is hormones that is amplifying these ocular migraines for you. And then after the pregnancy, they kind of receded. I only had maybe one or two again for the next few years. Mm-hmm. And my concern is now, 10 years later, they are now becoming more frequent. And the auras associated with them, whereas they used to be just visual, are now changing in nature to include some new types of auras.
Such as what? Sounds?
Intense vertigo. Is one of them. And the other one was olfactory, smelling like burnt toast or burnt coffee beforehand. So I'm getting more often and different kinds of auras, and I'm wondering if this is something I need to go get checked out further.
Well, first of all, so how often are they happening when you say more often?
About four times a year now.
Okay. So four times. And you've never had a workup by a neurologist at all?
No.
Okay. So here's what I do. Let's assume you're coming into my office. Hey, this is my office. You're not coming into my office.
Yeah.
You are there. This is what Carl called the virtual office, right, Carl?
Yeah, that's right.
Come on. You know, but nobody checked her in.
Do you have your VR goggles
on? How about the insurance card? Come on, you come in the office.
That's virtual, too.
I mean, it's your date of birth, your insurance card, what was your mother's last name, HIPAA. But it's not HIPAA compliant, so I can give you information and others. So first of all, you ought to see a neurologist. And the reason is it sounds like you have ocular migraines, but you know what? Sometimes the internet doesn't have all the information you need, and AI is coming up, and AI is going to be really important in terms of searching. I mean, I think of it as a dramatic breakthrough, which I think it's going to be, but still sometimes you need things curated. So going to a neurologist is a great idea. Now, given that, let's assume, for instance, you have ocular migraines. I'm a migraineur. I get migraines. My first migraines are probably started when I was 5 years old, 5 or 6 years old. We didn't know whether my mother just called them headaches, but they've disappeared over time. There are medicines you can take when you have a migraine. Now, if something happens four times a year, most people are not going to take a medicine every day to keep it from happening four times a year, unless they're really disturbing. But sometimes it's nice to take a medication when the migraine happens. And there are a number of medications that you can use to stop the migraine. And the other part of it is you need to have assurance, this is only a migraine, there's nothing else, which it does sound like that's all it is. It's been going for 10 years. History is typical. But I think a neurological consultation is a good idea. Because aren't you just disturbed by them, sort of worried about them?
It's alarming when they happen. It always is. It's very disarming when they take place.
Right. It's very disarming.
They are so disruptive.
No, they're disruptive and disarming. And the other thing is knowing what something is and saying, hey, I went over here and the neurologist said it's this and that, that can be comforting. You go, oh, you know, it's a migraine. I have to deal with this versus I don't really know what's going on here. So, yeah, I think you should have a workup. No rush on this. It's been going on for 10 years, but that's what I would recommend. And once again, you may get some medications that stop the migraine sooner from happening. Or you may say, hey, I'm going on a trip. I'm going with my kids. We're going to Disney World. I'm worried I'm going to get a migraine. You may end up taking some preventive medication to make sure it doesn't happen then.
Extraordinarily sound advice. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. Take care. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Garba.
You take care now.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's do a voicemail now. How about that? Let's hear from Sevierville, Tennessee.
I have a question regarding kind of exercise and caffeine. I always run a lot and work out a lot, and I always find myself taking, in order to, not necessarily just to work out or just to run, taking caffeine, but in order to be able to effectively work out and effectively run, and not too slowly, if that makes sense. But I was wondering if you have any solutions to either lowering caffeine dosages or cutting it out at all and being able still to perform at a really decent level. And I want to just say thank you. Have a good day.
So coffee seems to activate certain receptors in the brain that are also responsive to an internal hormone that we use for energy called adenosine. And when we wake up in the morning, it's really at the lowest level. These particular internal hormones are at the lowest level because we're relaxed, we're waking up in the morning. And does coffee really stimulate these receptors? Or if you wait 90 minutes later when the receptors are going, will it stimulate it more? In other words, because you already have the receptors going, because we use it to kind of get the receptors online. But he brings up a good point. If he wants to do well with running, would it be better for him not to stimulate those receptors when he gets up, but wait 1 hour after he gets up or 2 hours when he starts his jog? Will he get a better performance? So it's a question, and there's no good research, but I just looked over an article about this, that there are individual differences in how we all relate to caffeine. So, for instance, years ago, I could drink coffee any time of the day or night. I could drink it 6 o'clock in the evening, 8 o'clock in the evening. Never kept me awake. I can't do that anymore. So I think you've got to look at individual differences. Like he brings up a good point. Maybe for running, you want to see how it affects you. So I would experiment. What I would do is, if I were a runner, I would not have coffee when I get up in the morning. And then I would wait 90 minutes, an hour or 2 hours before I had that coffee, and then I would run. But it takes 30 minutes before coffee, the caffeine really gets into your system. It's not that you drink the coffee and it's there. It's 15 to 30 minutes, 45 minutes, depending on that. So I'd experiment with him individually and see it. Now, the first thing I do in the morning, I have my cup of coffee.
Sure.
Do you make it the night before? Do you set it up?
No. I have one of these little instant, you know, it grinds it up. You push a button, it grinds it up, gives you a fresh espresso right there in the morning.
Yeah, see?
Just push a button.
Yeah. Brad, what about you? You have coffee in the morning when you get up? No, I don't want to shake
his
head. Brad.
We want to hear your lovely voice.
I want to hear the Brad voice. I mean, tell me about your coffee experience.
I don't drink coffee.
Oh, you see?
Oh, the voice of God.
Yeah, this force, that was really forceful. He doesn't drink coffee.
Yeah.
Well, for those of us who drink coffee, I set it up the night before because I want to walk into my kitchen and have the coffee ready.
Ready
I don't
to
even
go.
Want to push the button.
You don't even want a button to push.
I want to walk there. I want to smell coffee when I open the door. Not open, when I come down the stairs.
It is nice
in the room,
to wake
I
up
can
to that
smell
aroma.
It.
Yeah.
I go over, I have a cup of coffee. And once again, getting back to it, experiment and see whether or not coffee in the morning, jog later on, you know, an hour later, half an hour later when you get up, or no coffee and take coffee just before you jog and look at the timing and see if it makes a difference for you. It may.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, it's time to log in to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page for another edition of Facebook Feedback.
Ba, 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 Facebook Feedback.
Boom, boom. All right, that added a lot, I think. All right, Zorba, this is a question from Cindy in Kentucky.
Okay.
Who writes, my husband heard your radio show while driving on vacation. He wants your advice on his memory loss and lack of dexterity as a 53-year-old male. I think a lot of it is anxiety, and he's afraid to take anything. Thanks.
Well, first of all, memory loss can be a small issue or a big issue.
Sure.
That's kind of, you know, it's a broad thing. And people always worry about the memory. I think a lot of us think our memory was better years ago, when in fact our memory may be the same. You know, I think we have, you know, we look backwards and say, I used to be able to remember those things, but now I can't. But the real issue and loss of dexterity, you kind of have to have it looked at. You got to figure out what's going on. That deserves a doctor's visit at 53. It would also at 63, 73, or 83, but 53, you shouldn't really be thinking of memory loss. You got to figure out what's going on. Could be drugs you're taking. Could be something you're not doing. It could be you need exercise. I don't know what's going on. You need to be seen.
Do you have a healthy living question for the good doc? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page, or you can just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls, more of your voicemails,
more
emails, and we'll dive into another healthy living topic. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor
on your health.
Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. He's right there. He's
looking good
in his athleisure wear. He's not. He's a real man.
That's right.
He's a you are a real man, Zorba.
That's right. I'm not virtual. I'm not SI, AI, PI, or DI.
PI would be cool. You do have the mustache of Magnum PI, though.
I do.
Right? Tom Selleck mustache?
I do. I got it.
You got it. 800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. That's 800-462-7413. But before we get back to those calls, you know what? Before we get to the research topic too, I just want to say, if I could just say a quick thank you to our listeners.
Thank you.
There is a lot of content out there.
Right. Yes.
And if you're listening right now, thank you for listening because you could be doing a lot of other things. I'm not saying don't keep listening to the show and, you know,
turn it off and go do the yard work. And they provide really good feedback for us so we can improve the show. And also, we have a purpose behind doing the show, which is to medical literacy, health literacy, to get people to ask questions, to answer questions that they have. So we know that the educated consumer of medical care gets better medical care, period.
Mm-hmm.
When you know more, you get a better outcome. So thank you for listening, and thanks for sharing your stories.
Absolutely.
You know, people share their stories, and then that's how people relate to it. And we've been doing this for more than 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, more than three decades, which shows it really has a purpose. We have a wonderful fan base, so we just want to thank our fans.
Thanks for learning from us, and thanks for teaching us as well.
Yep.
Let's learn something here, Zorba. Let's learn about new research on epidurals.
Well, this is kind of interesting. So first of all, epidurals, when Penny and I, you know, had our kids, this is years ago, there were no epidurals. They were just sort of beginning. And then epidurals over time have increased in the U.S. They really help a lot with labor pain, and they're very common. And the question is, are there certain issues that actually work for them better? And this was a study that showed epidurals were linked to a reduction in certain serious complications after childbirth.
Hmm.
And not just a reduction of pain, but complications. So there's something called severe maternal morbidity, which are risk factors for heart attacks, heart failure, sepsis, hysterectomy. And there's certain criteria that lead to whether or not you are at risk for severe maternal morbidity. And certain underlying conditions, you know, diabetics and so on, certainly have these risk factors. And the question was, what about epidurals and do they play a role? So this came out of Scotland, the Scottish National Health Service. They have one insurance company there. It's called the government. So they've got really good information. And they looked at roughly 550, close to 600,000 women who were in labor. Average age was 29. So they're not older at 36 or 38. Average age is 29, which is probably close to what it is in many parts of the U.S. Most are white, 93% white, so we don't know whether or not African-Americans, Asians, might also be there. And we know from research that ethnicity can make a difference, but they looked at that. I want to bring that in. And 22% of them had an epidural during labor. And then they looked at those who did not have an epidural, and they looked at those who had severe maternal morbidity risk factors. And they found that those who had an epidural, who had those risk factors, 35% reduction in risk factors of how that affected their birth if they had an epidural. And there were a 50% reduction in terms of maternal morbidity, not only during labor, but after labor. So the epidurals, if you are at risk for having complications during labor, the epidurals reduce the risk that you're going to actually have those complications. And that's what's really kind of interesting. Now, why is this actually the case? Well, there may be something physiological that's going on, and there may be something psychological because it's the reduction of pain, and pain is perceived, you know, within the brain. We don't really know what it is. It may be something for steroids, how much steroids you produce, how much adrenaline you produce, because you don't have the pain associated with epidural. That remains to be seen. But this is rather interesting that epidurals don't just affect the pain of delivery, but if you're at a high-risk delivery, it may also affect the outcome of the delivery and whether you have complications such as sepsis or the need for other things that may affect your heart, your kidneys, if you're at risk. So I think it's very important research that comes out for any woman who's in labor and considering an epidural, that this may be another reason to have it, that it may keep you healthy.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Call us anytime. Let's go back to those calls now. This is a listener from El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hi. Here's my question. I am. I have a condition known as atrial fibrillation.
Okay.
And I am about to get a procedure done where they're going to implant what they call the Watchman device.
The Watchman, yes.
And I, yes, the Watchman made by Boston Scientific. And
right.
I believe it keeps you from developing blood clots.
That's right.
To prevent strokes.
The risk of stroke,
and
exactly.
I just wondered if there were any side effects.
Sure, sure.
With that particular device.
Yeah. So first of all, how long have you had AFib, atrial fibrillation?
Probably, it was diagnosed maybe at the beginning of the year in January.
Okay, so just recently.
I had had other heart problems. I had a VT at one time, a ventricular, you know, I have an arrhythmia, of course. And I had a couple of bouts with VT.
VTAC.
So they implanted
A pacemaker?
A defibrillator.
A defibrillator, rather.
And then,
right.
And then now I have a two-port defibrillator due to the AFib. I guess one controls the ventricular part, the other the atrial part.
So you've got a bunch of stuff going on. You've got rhythm problems within your heart.
Yeah, exactly the electricity. Uh-huh. And you know, I tried some blood thinners. Didn't work well for me. You know, too many side effects, so that made me a candidate for the Watchman.
What were the side effects from your blood thinner?
I experienced some bleeding, actually, in my urine.
That can be a common side effect from it, where people all of a sudden have blood in their urine and because the kidneys are bleeding when they shouldn't be bleeding. So let's talk.
Correct.
Are you symptomatic with your AFib, by the way? Do you have symptoms? Did you know you were in it or not?
At first, I did not know I was in it. And I was, they found out, they actually had to, you know, every 10 or 12 years, they've got to replace
the pacemaker.
The device, because they replaced
the
battery. And when they went in to replace the old device, that's when, and I understand sometimes the side effect of the surgery itself can be you develop AFib.
Yeah, AFib develops, usually there's an abnormality, which we don't quite understand. We don't know, but there are risk factors to developing AFib. About two-thirds of the people with AFib don't have any symptoms. And one-third of the people do have symptoms, you know, shortness of breath, or they just feel the heart jiggling.
Yeah, I get a little shortness of breath. I get a little lightheaded, although... I'm you know, I still walk 2 to 3 miles a day.
Great. Very important.
You know, I still go to the gym.
Very important.
I mean, I keep it paced. I'm not what I used to be years ago, you know, but I still maintain a certain level of fitness.
Who is what they were years ago? As soon as you say you're not what you were years ago, it means you're older.
I'm 72 now.
You're 72. That's right. You didn't say that at 25. 25, you didn't say I'm not what I used to be.
Right. So for the most part, you know, 90% of the time I feel normal, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So let me tell you about the Watchman. It's a very good, it's been around now, I'm not sure if it's been around for 5 years. It's been around for some time. It's been tested.
Correct.
Medicare has changed some of the criteria. They've opened it up a bit more. And I want to explain a little bit about what it is. So AFib is where your heart, you've got four chambers in your heart, two ventricles, two atrium. Atrial fibrillation is where your heart engages. Instead of going bub-up, 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 you have an irregular beat, and it's bub-bub-bub-bub-bub-bub. It's a very irregular beat because you've got extra electrical stimulation that comes from the pulmonary veins, comes into the heart, and all of a sudden the heart does it. And even if we treat it and fix it with with a procedure that goes in, basically an ablation procedure, even if it's treated, you're still at risk.
I've had two ablations.
Yeah, two ablations.
Right.
So here's what happens. In the atrium, you got these two, upper chamber and low chamber. In the left atrium, there is a closet. It's not really a closet, but it's a metaphor. It's called the left atrial appendage. And that part, that little part that is a shape, sometimes it's a teardrop shape, sometimes it's the shape of a chicken wing, believe it or not, it's called the chicken wing shape, but there's three or four shapes. And the blood goes in there, and it doesn't always go out of there. And so a clot can form within there. And if a little clot forms, you know, because the blood is not moving in there enough with atrial fibrillation because it's irregular, it goes out through the body, and then it lodges in the smallest blood vessel in line next, and that turns out to be in the brain. And that's why the stroke happens. And so with the Watchman, they go and they close the door. They go with a couple of little catheters like they do with stents. They go in, they put it up, they measure you with something called a transesophageal echo, measure to see what that closet looks like, put this on, and basically the body then heals over it with scar tissue that closes that closet. And then the risk for atrial fibrillation, stroke caused by AFib, distinctly less, and you can get off your blood thinner. It's a good procedure.
Mm-hmm. Good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm not, like I say, it took me off of the blood thinners right away. And they said, you're not too high risk because you're not overweight and you stay in shape, you know?
Yeah. You're not at high risk, but it's still double to triple the risk of somebody healthy your age. And if you get this put down, you reduce that risk to practically about the same as someone your age, much, much less. Good procedure. How often is let me ask you, the cardiologist who's doing it, how many have they done?
I haven't asked him, but he's one of the top, he's actually an electrophysiologist, I think.
Got you.
Which is a cardiologist with special training on the electricity, electrical part.
Yes. So he is probably well trained on this. Yeah, he's probably well trained. And that's your dog in the background, by the way.
That's not the doctor, is it?
It's not the doctor. That is not a joke.
Sorry.
That is not a joke. Your brain, Carl, your brain just goes in strange ways.
It's clotting.
But your brain is clotting.
Sorry.
But once again, you might want to say, how often do you do the procedure? That's always good to ask. But if it's an EP physiologist doing this, he's probably well-trained in it. And that's it. I want to make sure I'm not the first 30 that someone does of the procedure, because that's where kind of the risk factors come in. Once you've done more than 30, if you do it on a regular basis, I consider that time to be pretty well-trained in somebody who is well-trained. If that makes sense.
I'll be sure and ask that. I have an appointment tomorrow, matter of fact.
Yeah, I would ask, I would say, how many have you done? How often are you doing? How many have you doing? And they go, yeah, I've been doing this for 6 months or a year. Just want to ask you, want to say, well, no, it's a new procedure and I'm just getting started on it. I wouldn't have that person do it.
Correct. Okay.
Good luck. It's a good procedure. It'll be good for you because you don't tolerate blood.
I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing this and thanks for listening to the show.
My pleasure. I enjoy it.
Well, thanks. Take care.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we head out today, Zorba, as you know, we get so many questions from our wonderful listeners.
We love questions, by the way.
We do. We love it. But we also get voicemails from folks who just want to share a comment or a health tip. So it's time for the segment we call Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips. Thanks, we appreciate it.
We do, right?
We do.
We appreciate it quite a bit.
All the time.
Yeah. Do you like that triangle work on that song?
I like it. I think it's great. It's great. It's wonderful.
You brought in the one of the best triangle players in the Midwest for that.
It's emotive. Well, it hits me right in the heart. It's gone with the question. Okay. Gone with the comment.
Sorry.
Is it a musical comment? Is it a harmonious comment?
You'll just
have
to see.
Or is it a dysphonic comment?
Yeah, you'll have to see here. It is a comment from a listener in Wisconsin.
My comment is the person who just called in talking about osteoarthritis pain. I was diagnosed with osteoarthritis pain and not wishing to go the pharmaceutical route. I had pain in my hip from osteoarthritis, and I was given some PT to work on. But at the same time, I discovered the paleo diet, and I started making bone broth and drinking that regularly. And I believe that from that, my pain really subsided. I had became more flexible and didn't even need to do the PT every day. Now I'm better than ever. Just wanted to give you that advice. I was 39 when this happened at first, but I'm 56 now, and I'm feeling great, better than ever. Thanks. Bye.
Well, first of all, 39 to have osteoarthritis, often there's a genetic component to that because it's kind of on the young side to have it, although we all may have a little bit of that with her. Good idea. Good remedy. If bone broth works, I think it's a great idea to try it. You know, we have osteoarthritis and we have pain from it. Anything we can do to get it better, I like this. I think if anyone has osteoarthritis, you might try bone broth and see if it works. Worked for her, it may work for you.
All right. Finally, Zorba, let's hear from another listener from right here in Wisconsin.
I just want to thank Dr. Zorba for the years of informative and entertaining programs, but also wanted to share with him that I, too, am from the Lincolnwood area, and he had a mom who worked part-time at Weebolts. I had an aunt who worked part-time at Weebolts. So we are about the same age. We grew up in the same culture. You don't find that too often. Thank you. Bye-bye.
No, you don't. That's right. Weebolts was a department store in Chicago, and we lived right near Lincoln Village, which is where it was sort of a small chain of department stores. And my mother worked there for, I don't know, couple of decades. She worked in the cosmetics counter. So she knew lots of women who came into that department store because she was head of the cosmetics counter. And there, so a lot of people remember her. A lot of older women remember her with fond memories because they'd go in to get Revlon products or Estee Lauder, Maybelline, CoverGirl, but all this stuff wasn't commonly sold in drugstores as much as it was. So great. Brings back wonderful memories, and thanks for sharing that.
Do you have a tip or comment for the show? Just send us an email at
zorba@wpr.org.
Should we do this again next week, Zorba?
I hope so.
Okay,
I think so.
We'll try. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us through Facebook.
And you can call us anytime.
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 To leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen.
Da, da, da.
And our technical director is Brad Kohlberg.
Da, da, da.
Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran.
Da, da, da.
Our fake horns are by Zorba Pastor. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
From WPR.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.